his remote covering the team somewhere. I don't know if he's in Montreal or Washington or where he is. We'll find out momentarily here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. A big show coming up today. Of course, the Canucks played in Montreal. They practiced in Montreal today. They'll play in Washington tomorrow. So a lot to look back on, a lot to look forward to. We'll speak with Brendan Batchelor at 12:30, get his thoughts about the result in Montreal and look ahead to the rest of the road trip with Batch a little bit as well. And at 1:30, very excited to chat with Sarah Nurse, forward for the Toronto Scepters. Of course, the PWHL Takeover Tour comes to Rogers Arena tomorrow, January 8th. It's Toronto versus Montreal. I know Sarah and her team are in town already, so excited to chat with her about that game and the Takeover Tour and year two of the PWHL. So we got Batch at 12:30. We got Sarah Nurse at 1:30. We got a whole lot to get into. Let's go right to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 7th. We'll start with the headlines. Canucks lose. Another loser point for the Canucks. 5-4 in overtime against Montreal. They blow a 3-1 lead after going down early 1-0 in the game. Nils Höglander takes a penalty late in the third period. They survive that one, but then Montreal converts on the 4-on-3 overtime power play. I should say they survive the portion of it in the third period. Power play still ongoing for Montreal, and they convert on the 4-on-3 in overtime to pick up the win. So that's obviously the headline, is that they get 1 point. And as we spoke about yesterday on the show, tough to drop the first game of this road trip, considering the quality of opponents still upcoming tomorrow in Washington against a very good Capitals team, and then Carolina, Toronto, and Winnipeg, all very, very daunting opponents to various degrees. So tough to lose this one, especially, you know, Montreal coming back from a long road trip themselves. You thought maybe the rest advantage might even be in Vancouver's favor. They go up 3-1. Does that play into their hands against a potentially tired Montreal team? And as we've seen pretty often this year, multiple goal lead doesn't matter for the Canucks, and they eventually drop the game in overtime. All right, now joining me from parts unknown, Thomas Strands. What's going on, buddy?
I'm in D.C.
Very good.
Ready to defend Canada's honor in the upcoming trade war. And
boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground. And I mean, I thought last night was a heck of a game.
Yeah.
Like, just a really good game of hockey. Now, unfortunately, I felt like it was a good game largely because, you know, Montreal's speed and the way that that team's playing right now, I mean, it was a spectacle, right? There were huge hits from Caden Gooley. Did you notice that the Habs were occasionally leaving the offensive zone with possession of the puck to try and attack the Canucks off the rush? Like, I don't know that I've seen any other team do anything like that all season. There's a hint of, like, Jacques Martin and how they're playing right now in terms of some of those set breakouts, especially at later stages of the third period. The Habs, they didn't stand back. It wasn't like a gentleman's agreement last 5 minutes, but the Habs did not want the Canucks to have the puck, and they would come down and try these set breakouts. They were so committed to attacking the Canucks off the rush, and ultimately with a fair bit of success. Meanwhile, JT Miller had his best game of the season without question. Lekkerimäki looked great. So the Canucks, you know, weren't solely a foil, but I did feel like the Canucks 3-1 lead was a bit soft in real time. Right, the Habs were just generating at will off the rush all game long. And honestly, one thing that I think has been really, like, characteristic of this run of Canucks games since Christmas, Jamie, is whether it was Bjorkstrand flubbing three breakaways, or Nyquist missing a handful of tap-ins, or Sharon Govich. I mean, I don't know what Sharon Govich was doing. And then last night it was Josh Anderson missing, like, two backdoor tap-ins when the Habs found him with the cage yawning directly at him, like in his face. You know, it really did feel for much of the night, especially when the Canucks built that 3-1 lead, like, you know, and Lankinen, I'm not taking anything away from Lankinen, who I thought made far better saves than the save percentage will indicate. Like, yep. He had a difficult night and then ends up getting beaten on a couple unfortunate ones, like the go-ahead Montreal goal was especially unlucky, as that's just sort of deflected in by Tyler Myers. The rebound, though, on the tying goal, the 3-3 goal, that was on Lankinen. I thought Lankinen was solid, but it was more about the Habs not finishing their chances. And honestly, Vancouver's had really good save percentage, like goaltending, quote-unquote, post-Christmas, but I really do feel like a lot of it's been that they've benefited against this softer side of the schedule in terms of what their opponents are finishing against them. And that, to me, more than anything, is where I'm seeing a bit of a warning sign. Like, even though I think the Canucks have been pretty competitive, I thought last night was probably their worst game since Christmas as a team, frankly. I know people will talk about the blown third period lead and on, but the Canucks didn't deserve a lead. Like, the Habs were the better team. They bullied the Canucks in the first shift. They kept the pressure on. They outplayed them in every single period as a standalone period. They generated the bulk of scoring chances all game long. And honestly, they were making hay against the Canucks off the rush. It was really poor Habs finishing and then a run of excellent conversion work from Lekkerimäki and JT Miller in particular that allowed the Canucks to, in my mind, steal a point. And, at the end of the day, one thing that I worry about is, like, Ovechkin's not going to flub those Sharon Gauthier chances. Matthews and Marner, if Matthews is in the lineup when the Canucks face them on Sunday, they're not going to flub those. Martin Nekash probably isn't going to. And I'll tell you who I know for sure isn't going to, Gabe Vilardi. So, like, very seriously, I have a, overall in this, like, Hughes-less stretch, I've been nervous about, or I've actually been pretty impressed by the Canucks' battle level. But one underlying concern I have is I do kind of think they're in for some regression from the perspective of shooters taking their chances, which the Canucks are surrendering too many of. And I think that more than anything, right? It's not that they're blowing third period leads. It's that they're fortunate to have them. And that's sort of the big picture concern I have is the Canucks go into this, eight of their next nine games against top 10 teams stretch this January gauntlet that, could be season defining here.
Well, and I think, it's kind of interesting because I agree with you, but I don't think they played particularly well last night, even when they were up 3-1. But I also think there's some pretty strong positives to take from the game for the Canucks in terms of individual performance and JT Miller and Lekkerimäki. We can get to those guys in a second. But as you said, Montreal created a lot, especially off the rush. And then I think still the defining issue with this team right now, and even with Quinn Hughes back in the lineup, albeit as Tuck had said today, obviously not at 100% as he comes back from injury.
Yeah.
The issue is that it's such a struggle to generate scoring chances and to generate shots, right? Another game where they really struggled to do so. And look, Quinn Hughes obviously makes a difference, even if he's not 100%. He's so good, he makes a difference. But it's just like we're getting pretty late. We're almost halfway through the season now. And even when they've had something close to their full complement of players, the games where they've looked really dangerous at even strength have been pretty few and far between. And I know Montreal is playing a lot better and especially playing a lot better defensively and all of that. But that, man, it's just whatever they're doing, whatever the message is, whatever they are trying to do to create more scoring chances, right? Because again, Tuck had said after practice today, look, we only had a couple of minutes of offensive zone time. That's not enough. We need to do more. They're aware it's a problem. It's not as if this is how they want to play, and yet whatever they're doing is just not working. And I think you're right to point to, they didn't control play last night, and the scoring chances against them, if people start to convert, that could be trouble. I just can't get past the offense right now. It is such a struggle to get scoring chances, to get shots on goal for this team.
Well, and they had a chance on that late power play in the second period to kind of put this one away a little bit. And you knew that it would matter given just how much better Montreal had been on the night. I think I tweeted something to that effect. Like, this is a huge opportunity in this game. Obviously JT Miller ends up just dissecting the Habs PK on the Jake DeBrus goal. So that mattered, obviously. But, you think about that first Canucks goal, it's Nils Höglander on a retrieval, sort of out-dueling a Montreal Canadiens defender. Then they get sort of a fortunate bounce that springs the Lekkerimäki breakaway that JT Miller finishes, right? It's like a weird one sort of off the stanchion. And then it's a great pass by JT Miller to hit Lekkerimäki off the rush on the 3-1 goal. And then you get a power play goal. Well, two of those are not the result of like the Canucks constructing something, right? And when you contrast that with the Habs and the way that they dominated the puck, the way that they prized possession, the way that they broke out with these sort of set breakouts and honestly set regroups too, there was such a coordinated effort. And that's what the Canucks wanted to be this season, you know, and right now they're not that. And I don't know if they have the personnel to be that. And they certainly don't have the personnel to be that if Quinn Hughes is as encumbered as he looked to me throughout the game last night. I mean, the one sequence, and I don't know if it came across on the Amazon stream, but the one sequence on the power play late, that second power play late, Hughes was in some discomfort, and I don't mean injury discomfort. Like, there was something wrong with a piece of equipment in his shorts or in and around the core area. And he went to try and fix it with his right hand and just, like, couldn't reach because it was on his left side, but he didn't want to try and work on it with his sort of gnarly brace. Finally, he decided he would. He took off his left glove and tried to fix it. Still couldn't get it done. I don't know what piece of gear it was. He was done talking by the time I got to the room because I'm filing on deadline, and obviously that was a game with some swings. And then he goes to the bench and, like, enlists Teddy Bluger to fix whatever it was, right? And it's like, oh my God, like, you know, to play as much as he did in a spot where you're like, I can't adjust this with that hand.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, like, respect, right? Like, massive respect. This is not criticism of Quinn Hughes. If anything, it's like, holy cow, how are you still, like, his feet are still working.
Yep.
Right? Like, his feet are still working, and that makes him special in and of themselves. But it wasn't a, you know, Quinn Hughes 3 weeks ago before he sustains that injury against the Senators. Look, he's coming out of that game, and the shot attempts count is like 75% for the Canucks, and it's a totally different game. And that's just not who he was last night. Like, that's just not who he was. Now, maybe it's one of those injuries that you're able to, like, heal as you play through. That does happen. I know people don't think it happens, and they criticize the team for guys rushing back, but, like, genuinely, guys can play hurt and then become healthier as, you know, time goes by. But I know, like, for this week, I don't know that we're getting the should clearly win the Norris. What are you talking about putting Adam Fox in the same sentence as this man? Go away. I don't know if we're getting that level of Quinn Hughes performance over the course of the next week based on what we saw last night. And you know, how materially limited he was relative to who he is. Still, he's still indispensable for this team. Don't get me wrong, but there is that. And then we get to the Brännström thing where it's just like, hey, this guy has to be in the lineup. Like, I don't know what else to say about it. It's not that he's a perfect player. It's just that they need some speed on the back end. That was so apparent last night. It's been so apparent for weeks. And, you know, I'm not being super critical of Tocchet and company because I think a lot of what Vancouver's going through is, like, personnel issues and injury issues, especially in terms of their attack. You know, I think Tocchet came into the season very clear-eyed about this team's need to generate more and generate more in different ways. And I think it's been waylaid more by injuries and poor individual performance and personnel on the back end than it has by Rick Tocchet's coaching or overall approach or dump and chase or whatever it is. But the scratching Brännström thing, like, right now with where this team is at, they just can't afford it. If you're a defender, an NHL capable defender who can actually move the puck and potentially keep up with faster forwards off the rush, you need to be in. You especially need to be in against Washington and Carolina. Less so against Toronto. You can probably get away without him against Toronto, but certainly against Carolina and Washington, you absolutely need Brännström in the lineup. There's no justification for scratching him here.
The other lineup consideration that is kind of front of mind for me is Jonathan Lekkerimäki, right? And as you said, he looks good. It looked fast, picks up a goal and an assist, you know, drives the net, kind of loses the puck, but JT Miller cleans it up for a goal and then shows off his shot again, scoring his second NHL goal. Thank goodness he looked off Tyler Myers. I think there would have been a lot of frustrated Canucks fans if he tried that pass across on the 2-on-1, but he knows what he's about. He knows he's there to shoot that puck, and It's very different player, obviously, different situations in their career from Eric Brandstrom, but you do kind of come back to the thing where it's like, look, is this player perfect? No. Is it going to take some things off the table for the coaching staff, maybe, if he's in the lineup? Yeah, but his specific skill set and his ability to attack off the rush, his speed, willingness to carry the puck, and then, of course, his shot, his the weapon that is his shot right now, I wonder just with how much of a struggle it has been to find those scoring chances for the team. They kind of need Lekkerimäki in that dimension in the lineup here for a stretch because they're limited. Their options are limited, right? There's only so many cards they can play that realistically have a chance to make them more dynamic, to make them more, you know, creative and attacking. And Lekkerimäki is one of those cards right now.
Yeah, Lekkerimäki looked great, and they need him to be a top nine capable guy. Who can punch up their offense,
yep,
especially in the absence of Dakota Joshua, right? I mean, even when you get Pettersson back and terminate the emergency conditions on Lekkerimäki's loan, like, you know, DiGiuseppe, mm-hmm, Sasson, I think right now with what this team is generating, you need the upside. You need the volatility, even if it is volatility relative to the sort of certain floor or the more certain floor, certainly than DiGiuseppe gives you. And that Max Sasson sort of has given them, although, you know, with an extraordinary run of favorable bounces that I think have perhaps made Canucks fans think something different than what is probably true in terms of his overall contributions. But yeah, Lekkerimäki needs to stay in the, they need to give him some run because,
yep,
they need a guy who can score, and he's a guy who can score. You know, and look, we did see, I think, as much as it was a great game for him in that 20-second stretch in particular, was,
you know, pretty good.
Frankly.
Yeah.
Right? We also saw him just get absolutely trucked.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, you know, head wasn't up. Like, his head wasn't up. And I think the hit looks probably worse than it is because I still think there's a lot of work to do in terms of his core strength. Right? In terms of, and it's not just about, oh, he, you know, hit that hit, he gets leveled as opposed to just knocked off the puck. It's also about not getting knocked off the puck down low and along the wall. And, you know, especially, like, I love if you can play him with JT Miller and get a little bit more off the rush from that line, great. The Canucks need that. But you also are going to need that line to be able to do the smart, stupid hockey thing, as Tanner Pearson once described playing with JT Miller to me, where you're able to dominate play beneath the hash marks and give everyone a breather and mm-hmm. take possession that way and lean on JT Miller's, like, size, you know, the overall truculence of his game, but also his passing from down low positions, you know, to sort of find that layered traffic and generate that zone time and do this Canucks identity thing that we're just not seeing enough because the Canucks aren't controlling play at the sort of clip that they need to, whether they're generating scoring chances or not, right? Like, generating scoring chances is not a new problem.
That's right. But at least they were in the zone last year. Yeah.
At last year, at least it felt elective.
Yeah.
You know, now they can't get there.
Yeah. They can't put themselves in a position to pass up on scoring chances like they were last year. They're not even doing that.
Back to the point for a tip shot.
Yeah.
It inevitably goes into the net. You likely off some fourth liners.
Off Sam Lafferty's knee. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, but that's what I mean.
The backboard.
Like the
Why didn't we call him the backboard? Damn. Missed opportunity.
No, that was Kuzmenko. Kuzmenko was the backboard. Like, especially,
yeah, right,
on the back door, the back door of the power play. He was like, man. Anyways.
Still can't believe they had a banner of that guy outside the arena. It's still, like, one of the most mind-blowing. Every time you bring him up, I'm just like, I get these, like, this, like, PTSD of, like, people really insisting to me that he was significantly better than Besser and Garland and a star player. And I was just like, oh, I'm so confident I'm not wrong, but everyone thinks I'm nuts.
Anyways, I think you're right that we all see the what has to still develop with Lekkerimäki, but he just the upside and the traits, the things he does well are just such a perfect fit for what this team needs right now. But I think you have to live with,
right,
some of the downside stuff and just put him in the lineup because, as you said, like, game-breaking ability, they need that. They need some of that game-breaking juice in the lineup right now. Okay, we'll save JT Miller because I do want to talk about that performance beyond the obvious.
Yeah.
His best game of the season, but it deserves more than a quick minute here, I think. So we'll put a pin in that.
We need to move on, but I just want to bring this, like, a one-sentence thing.
Yeah.
I just want to bring up so we bookmark it and come back to it. But in the same vein that Lekkerimäki's upside needs to be chased, You know, I think you can apply the same rule to Nils Höglander, who obviously costs them the game with an undisciplined penalty late. And as much as you might not like the call, like, he got away with the first one, and it was the second
one. That's the thing. In a vacuum, is the second one soft? Maybe, but you were just on the edge, and everyone's looking at you because you're running around without a stick. You can't go and then do the second one.
And they would have forgiven you the first
one. They did. He got away with it. He got away with it. He just had to stop.
Correct. So like, the point is it is a soft call, but he put himself in a bad position, and lack of discipline has been one of the issues that has, you know, earned him so many of those Rick Tocchet stares as he goes to the penalty box. Anyway, my point being, there's another player there with a ton of volatility, and yet we've seen that offense sort of come alive since Christmas, and the Canucks need to keep chasing that, even at the expense of those moments. Excuse me.
So we'll talk more JT Miller later on in the show, because obviously he's the standout performer for the Canucks last night in Montreal, even though they lose in overtime. Really quick entry to the broadsheet here. We're not even going to really discuss it. I thought we were going to escape with nothing in the broadsheet today, but Frank Saravalli drops his latest trade board up at Daily Faceoff. Of course, Frank, a contributor here on 650 as well. He has one Canuck on it, and that is Elias Pettersson, number 25. On his trade board, he has this to say: it's still an incredibly difficult transaction to pull off in season, but if someone must be on the move, it seems like it would be Pettersson, who still has value with his age and position, and the fact that Vancouver can move him unencumbered, unlike JT Miller. Very interesting tidbit there from Frank, suggesting that actually, and I think this is counter to the prevailing wisdom, if they were to trade one of their top two centers, Pettersson may be more likely to move than JT Miller. Okay, we'll leave that there. We'll take a little break from that whole conversation. Lineup notes: the Canucks practiced in Montreal today. They'll play in Washington tomorrow. So we didn't really get a lot of updates, a lot of information from that game, you know, based on the pick, or from that practice, I should say, based on the pictures and the videos the team released. Elias Pettersson was there skating with the team, so that bodes well, I guess, for his potential return in Washington tomorrow. You know, then the question becomes, if Pettersson's back, who comes out of the lineup? I think worth noting, Phil DiGiuseppe, the low man in terms of ice time last night in Montreal, so that suggests he could be a possibility to come out. I also want to just flag this in the lineup notes: Carson Soucy, low man for the defenseman in terms of ice time, plays only 14 minutes and 21 seconds against the Canadiens. So just something to monitor. I don't think they would go as far as to, you know, take Soucy out and bring Brännström in, but anytime a player's ice time plummets like that game to game, and, you know, Soucy has typically played a lot of minutes for this team, worth pointing out, worth flagging, just to monitor going forward. A quick playoff standings update: Canucks playoff odds as a result of that loss in overtime tick down slightly to 73%. So, you know, the downward trajectory continues for this team, even though they are picking up a lot of these overtime loss points recently. And Drance, just before we wrap things up here, do you have anything in the betting odds segment for us? Oh, I'm on my own. Never mind. So Drance lost contact, but he says the Canucks are minus 180 to make the playoffs, which is sub 65% implied probability. So still a little bit of a discrepancy between Dom's model and the gambling odds, although they're getting a lot closer together in that 65 to 70, 75% range for the Canucks to make the playoffs. So still really good chances, but a lot less favorable than they were a month, 6 weeks ago. All right, that's the whiteboard for today. Drance, no, he wasn't broadcasting from the bottom of the well, anything like that. We'll try to get him reconnected. We'll talk to Brendan Batchelor here next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.